would you say if I said that I could bring them back?
I guess I'd say I never thought of that.
Well, alright, hold tight, you might want to stand back, because one small John is coming intact.
St. John forward, spitting out some more words, fully intact, jacked, ready to rap and attack. Small John on your lawn, living like a gnome, hit you with my lyrics like a bullet to your dome.
Tonight when he comes up here, he's either gonna kill or he's gonna suck. But there's no in between for Mr. John Forward.
Hey, listeners, this is John Forward, the host of the St. I don't know if the show's just, it's on the schedule, it's St. John Forward. I've been calling it St. John Forward Radio. That's kind of a mouthful. I don't know. It doesn't matter. This is the show that you're listening to on local FM 107.3. If you're listening live, you already know what time it is, but if you're listening to the podcast after the fact, you can tune in live every Monday night from 9 to 10 o'clock Atlantic time. And, yeah, this is my thing. I guess before everybody's clamoring for the John Forward therapy update, it's been probably a month since I've regurgitated my therapy session under your ears, because there hasn't been much going on, but my entire life is falling to pieces around me, and that's good radio, people, so that's the sacrifice I make for you. But before that, I've got had a couple of comedy related stand-up stuff going on this week. I went back to the Wilser's Room in Fredericton for the first time in a little while. They've got an open mic comedy show the first Thursday every month. It's upstairs from the Capitol in Fredericton, and went up, drove up with Arif Hussein, fellow local St. John comedian. It's always good going up for the road trip, talking some smack about everybody in there, stuff that I'm too diplomatic to say on the radio, but it's always fair game for the car trip. Still missing, we used to go on those car trips all the time with Mark Splude before he took a break from comedy, so that's why I haven't been going up as much, but Arif and I, it was a good time. It's also kind of hard to justify going up to do like a short set on a Thursday night when I gotta wake up and go to work the next morning, but old Brian Godso agreed to put us on in the first half so we could bail out. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see the second half of the show, but I got to go up and get into bed at a reasonable time, and I was working on a new bit, and I rejiggered it a little bit since the first time that I did it, and it went over pretty well. I was pretty happy with that. And I repeated the same. I kind of wanted to go up because I wasn't really sure about that one. I had made some changes, and I wanted to get another practice in before I did it on Friday at O'Leary's for No Jokes Bard Deluxe, which we had Jimmy McKinley in town. That was his first time on that show. He was headlining, and I kind of feel bad because Jimmy doesn't make it down for No Jokes Bard show very often. It's been a while since he's been down, and I want it to be a good time. Those last couple of No Jokes Bard Deluxe shows have been the best they've ever been the last few months. Great turnout, everybody having good sets, but Friday was kind of a so-so night. Normally, I make a Facebook ad on the Wednesday to kind of drum up interest for it, and I forgot all about it until Friday afternoon, so I still put one out. I still spent the same amount of money on it that I would have on Wednesday, but not a great turnout. There was the people that were there were good, solid, and we put on the best show that we could for them, but I'm not sure if the ad was the problem. Uptown seemed a little bit dead in general on Friday, so when I did the show at Wilser's Room, the main part of the bit that I repeated again on Friday, I did it in about 7 or 8 minutes, so I added in some extra stuff to pad it out a little bit and flesh it out, because it's a 15-minute set at O'Leary's. I went a little bit overboard. I think I probably did about 20 minutes. I have a clock set up there, but I always forget to look at it before I go on so that I can actually like, as I'm getting through my set, I can see, oh, wait, it's this time now. What time did I start? I have no idea. But I did well, but I did long, which, again, I feel bad doing that. It kind of takes the thunder away from the headliner, so I've kind of felt guilty about that. It's kind of tough to follow somebody that does like an extra long set right before you. So I kind of, and especially since Jimmy doesn't make it down that much, I kind of felt bad for that. He still went up and he did pretty well, but lost a couple of audience members in the process just because it's running long. I think those shows go too long. I think right now I've got a host, three people doing 15-minute sets, and then a half-hour headliner. I think starting next month I might trim that down to just the two 15-minute sets in the middle. Makes the show a little bit shorter and less of a marathon. Spread out a little bit more money available to everybody else. Nobody needs to do any longer time, but I'm going to experiment with that, and it makes it easier for me to book it. That's one less person that I need to fit on. And so anyway, that's what's going on comedy-wise. Life-wise, I'm just losing it. I thought I was going to talk about this last week, but I ended up just ranting and raving about various comedy beefs and all that stuff for the entire hour by myself last week. Work has been going terrible. I just got a new psychologist. I went for the first time 2 weeks ago, as I think I mentioned my previous therapist. After the last session, she was just kind of like, well, do you think you need to come back? And I don't know. I didn't feel fixed, and then a spot opened up with the original therapist that I was recommended to. So 2 weeks ago, I went in there and kind of gave the rundown of what I'd been talking to with the last one, and that was mostly just about my various conflicts with people, comedy-wise and otherwise, but I think I'm at peace with that, and I thought that I was in pretty good shape 2 weeks ago when I went to see the new one. Like, I've been unhappy at work for a long time, but I had a couple of irons in the fire, and I could kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel, so I was in a pretty good mood 2 weeks ago, and but then later that week, everything just fell apart, and I'm glad I made another appointment for 2 weeks from then. I had, just lots of bad stuff at work. I had an anxiety attack a few months ago. I've done that on stage a bunch of times. I'm not going to rehash it there, but ever since then, when I had to kind of complain to HR about management's terrible handling of that whole situation, I've been getting kind of a hostile vibe from one of my managers. I think maybe she got her knuckles wrapped a little bit about that, and the rapport that we used to have isn't quite there anymore. So just bad stuff going on. They also announced right before Christmas that starting in March, my sweet Monday to Friday shift, they're going to be moving us back onto shift work, which is what I did for the first 3 years that I was there, and I didn't enjoy it. It was a stressful time in my life, so I'm not too keen on going back to it. There was originally even going to be an open night shift as part of the overnight shift as part of the rotation. Luckily, a couple of people volunteered for that one, but it's still just a kind of a disaster. But 2 weeks ago, I was feeling good because I had applied for a couple other jobs in the same office in different departments, and I was feeling confident in them, but that's been chipped away. The one of the two jobs I wanted, it's not looking like I'm going to get it. I did really well in the interview, but there's lots of tough competition, so I don't think I'm going to get that. Plan B job, not really sure, but in addition to that, I got written up at work because I was looking at the internet for 2 minutes, and my boss that I suspect is mad at me for going to HR after the last one, she's been my desk is in a really open spot, so if I do my work, and the nature of my work is that sometimes there's downtime. I'm getting messages from other people and emails and phone calls, and sometimes I've got a couple of minutes in between things, and I just look at the internet to keep myself from going insane, and my manager just keeps sneaking up on me and giving me a tisk tisk, and what are you doing? And the last time I tried to explain to her that we don't really take breaks, so I'm entitled to one, though, so looking at something for a couple of minutes in between things every now and then is better than going outside for 6-10 minute long smoke breaks every day. And I thought that was the end of it. And then a couple of weeks ago, when I was booking myself an Airbnb for Moncton tomorrow to go do the hubcap contest, she was standing right next to me talking to somebody else about something. I didn't feel the need to hide it. So then she wagged her finger at me and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm booking a room." And then she gave me some grief because, "Is this the best time to do that?" And I'm like, "I'm caught up." And they're like, "Well, what about this thing?" And she was referring to something that was going to take me 2 minutes to do, and it was 11 a.m. I was going to kind of parse it out throughout my day, and so that was weird. People around me commented as to, like, what was that about and how awkward it was, but I thought that was the end of it. And then a couple of weeks ago, I find out that my boss had just found out that I had applied for one of these other jobs, which I told one of the bosses who didn't tell the other boss, and I was kind of feeling worried that my boss would thought that I was doing something behind their back. I don't know. But anyway, a few hours after I'd heard that story, I got written up for the booking a room incident. They sit me down. I look over the IT policy, which says that you're allowed intermittent personal use. Does booking a room count? Sure. Okay. Does being 2 minutes away from finish my work count as slacking off? No. Okay. Am I entitled to breaks? Yes. 15 in the morning, 15 in the afternoon. Can that be spread out throughout the day, such as in between things when I look at the internet? Oh, sure. Well, then why am I here? And I felt pressure in the moment to sign their thing. I wrote, because, you know, I'm applying for other jobs, and it's kind of weird that the same HR guy is disciplining me as the guy that I had my interview with. That doesn't look good. But I signed it reluctantly and made a note basically saying, I think this is stupid because I didn't do anything wrong, and wrote up anyway, tried to go to HR. They could not give less of a damn. And so I had a couple of sleepless nights over these last couple of weeks, and not feeling good about that, but I'm working through it. I've got some plans that hopefully by the end of this month, one thing or another, hopefully I'll get another one of these jobs or one of the outside ones that I've applied for. But if not, who knows? I can just go in there and blow my brains all over the cubicle. That's the last resort, I guess, but hopefully it won't come to that. Anyway, speaking of I don't know. That was gonna be a dumb transition. That's enough rambling from John Forward. I'm joined in the studio by my special guest here, Dan McCarthy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
We'll talk to you more in a few minutes, but people have heard enough of my voice, so we're gonna take a quick musical break, and then we'll be back to talk with Dan. And, I probably should have had this queued up before I started talking about it, but, I'm just gonna fill time. How does it feel to be here, finally, on the St. John Forward Radio, Dan?
This is a dream come true.
Yes, being in a real radio station, not sitting at somebody's kitchen table with a recorder.
It's
very, very professional.
It's a dining room table that he has, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. But, we've got all sorts of you got headphones, you got the cans, you got these microphones on arms, and
very fancy,
all sorts of stuff. But we're gonna play Losing Control by the Headstones, because that's how I'm feeling right about now. And we'll be back on St. John Forward Radio.
Go Oh.
What's going on? That's a whole other song. You know what? I don't like how my my Spotify all of a sudden doesn't end at the end of a playlist or an album. It goes into just album radio, which I don't want to do that. I put it at the bottom of the playlist specifically so I don't need to fade it out. But blew it again.
Damn it.
I'm sorry, Dan, that your first appearance here, you had to witness that.
It was very unprofessional.
Normally, I screw it up at the beginning of the first song where I forget to turn on like that part of the board. But mixing it up here on St. John Forward Radio, screwing it up at the end of the first song instead of at the beginning.
Very nice.
So, local comedian Dan McCarthy.
Yes.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you, John?
Good. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of don't know how to get into this or what we're going to talk about. I guess we can talk about comedy. How long have you been at it now?
A year and a half.
Yeah.
Roughly.
So, you did your first show at No Jokes Barred, correct?
No. Well, that was my first St. John show, but my intention was for my first show for it to be nowhere near anybody who I knew would be there. So I went to Fredericton for my first show. I did Wilser's.
Oh, Wilser's Room. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was an early, real comedy show. As I've said ad nauseum, the music open mics, but it's a whole other thing. Like, aside from, I did my first show for people that came to see a comedy show on purpose was at the Somerset in the North End, but there wasn't anybody there. It was mostly just performing for the other comedians and the people that were there with them. But yeah. Wilser's Room was my first time in front of an audience, and I had to pause for a laugh and remind myself that the story that I'd been rambling for the past year actually had some jokes in it.
Yeah.
Despite what other people may say.
Yeah. Wilser's was a similar situation for me, whereas I felt like I was just doing it for the other comedians because I'm a weird numbers math guy. I counted a total of 18 people there, including myself, and 12 of them were comedians. So it wasn't like we were playing for a big crowd.
Yeah. Well, comedians aren't a bad audience to have.
No, they're a very good audience to have.
What was, I remember the first time I went to Wilser's, it was kind of weird, kind of integrating myself into the thing. I got there and approached what I assumed to be the comedian table, and I was just kind of like, hey, you guys, are you the comedians? I'm a comedian. And they just kind of ignored me. What was, were you welcomed with open arms?
I was. Well, I had originally spoken to Trevor Muxworthy when he did the show with Kathleen McGee at Callahan's. You were on that show, too.
Yep.
And initially, the plan was...
Were you one of our 10 audience members? I don't even remember.
Let's be honest, there were not 10.
We might have had 5.
Okay, no, I was thinking of the huge turnout for Darren Frost at the same place. I think that had 9 or 10.
Yeah. So the initial, I heard about the show because I kind of creeped you on Facebook because I'd heard your name as a way of possibly doing stand-up in St. John, and I'd wanted to for a long, long time. And after the show, Trevor came right up to me and just asked me if I liked the show and all that stuff. And just from there, I thought, well, he had mentioned he runs a room in Fredericton.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll give Fredericton a shot before I give St. John a shot. Because I didn't want to make my debut in front of all the people I know. I feel like that's a hacky, dumb thing to do. Because number one, what if I do poorly? And I feel like it's something that people do who are just going to do it once or twice and then just screw off with it.
Yeah. Well, it's, I don't know. People have different ideas. Sometimes it's nice, or depending on the person, it might be worse. But some people like to have that kind of built-in fan base of people that they know, so it gives them a little bit more confidence. But if you're worried about embarrassing yourself in front of your friends, then that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. I talked about it for way too long before I actually did it for the first time, so it was one of those things that it had been built up for a very long time, both in my head and in the heads of others. So hoping, I just did it in front of nobody who I knew, just so if it did go poorly, then it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, I think the first few times I did the open mics, I think there was people around, and it wasn't, I don't remember how it was, but most of my non-comedy friends aren't regular attendees of the comedy shows anyway.
Yeah.
So they they get real tired of it real quick, especially when you're first starting out and you've only got a limited well of material.
Yeah.
Like, you can only ask your friends to come see you tell the same jokes over and over again so many times.
Yeah, and I always feel like there's a bit of a... you always get the friends who say, oh, I have to get out for a show sometime. I'm like, no, you don't really have to. It, for whatever reason, it seems to have come along with its own obligation that if you're some sort of a performance... or performer in any way, that your friends all have to be automatic fans, and I don't feel like that's really the case, particularly.
Well, I do. I don't expect them to come out every show, but I kind of... I'm a little bit disappointed that a lot of them don't come out very often, because I know, like, friends of mine that are in bands.
Yeah.
I try to go see them when I can, at least once.
Yeah.
Even if I don't like them, like, I'd go out and see it if I was in town and had nothing else to do, but, hasn't been the case. And which if you're not into it and you don't want to show up, that's fine. But the people that are like, oh, I gotta come out and see it, or I find it really frustrating. Do you have any clips online for me to watch? And I just feel like saying, no, you need to come see it live. Because I'm not getting those live laughs if you just laugh at home by yourself while you're watching me on the computer. That's why I don't care if you see it or not. I want you there as to be at least one extra person that's into it.
Yeah, you get a bit of like the thrill from actually getting the real audience laughter. Knowing that somebody watched it online doesn't really mean nearly as much.
Yeah, and I've had weird things where friends just are... when I did my first Shane Ogden show at the 3 Mile, I just felt like such a tool, because I was, back then Shane was more pressuring the opening acts to help sell tickets, which luckily that is not the case anymore. I felt really awful doing that, because at the time it was when I was still working shift work, and I was working every other weekend. And I had the R-Bar show one weekend a month, so really only one weekend a month where I'm available and not doing comedy stuff, and I just felt bad, like, going and hanging out with my friends and trying to awkwardly shoehorn in, like, hey, I'm doing this show, and I've got tickets if you want to buy them, and I just felt really bad, and, like, I was encouraged to, I sent off, like, a mass Facebook message to everybody on my Facebook list, like all my friends, like, hey, I'm doing this show and this is the thing that I've been wanting to do. One of these is kind of a milestone for me, and I would like to see some friendly faces in the audience. I felt like such a tool.
Yeah.
But luckily, there are enough people that usually show up at the shows that I don't need to rely on guilting my friends into coming out and support me. If they want to come and be entertained, then that's on them. If it's not something that they like, then that's fine.
Yeah. It also depends on the nature of the show itself, too. Like, I would be more likely to ask people to come see me at Chuckles than I probably would be to ask them to come see me at No Jokes Bar. It's nothing against No Jokes Bar.
Yeah, well, you're working stuff
out. I'm working stuff out, and the reason I love No Jokes Bar more than any other show is because I feel like you're getting more honest laughter at that show than any other type of show, because a good chunk of the people that are in the building weren't necessarily there for comedy.
Yeah.
And if you can get those people laughing, those are real honest laughs. They're not there for, they're not there for a night of comedy a lot of the time. So that's the real thrill for me, why I like No Jokes Barred the most.
Well, it's changed in the last little while, but still the people that are there are good audience members.
And typically,
you don't get a lot of polite laughs. I've done shows myself where, especially like a ticketed one where there's like an older crowd or something like that, and it's more of a fancy pants show, they'll kind of, if you just have the cadence of a punchline or you have like a pause, then they laugh when they're supposed to and they clap when they're supposed to. Like I remember doing a show with James Mullinger at the BMO Theater once, like a couple of years ago, and it was him working out new material, and that was advertised on the, and there was the poster with James's smiling face with a little word bubble that said, it might be shit. And so I came out. It was like a sold-out crowd, and I walked out, and my opening line was, "Sure are a lot of people here for a show that the poster says it might be shit." Huge roar of laughter and applause. I'm like, I don't deserve this.
Yeah.
And then I followed it up with the 1-2 punch of, "You guys must be really brave or really stupid." Like, oh, don't laugh at that.
Yeah. Like, make me work for it a little bit. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. And, you know, there's some people that, and there is something to be said. There's nothing wrong with, like, it's a good ego boost when you just destroy in a room like that. Yeah. And I did get the laughs that I wanted when I was supposed to, when I got into my actual material. But it's hard to trust it if they laugh at the garbage.
Yeah, that's not my type of room. If I wanted praise without merit, I would have become a musician. That's not my thing.
Yeah.
Not saying all musicians are untalented, it's just not my thing.
Yeah, and, you know, you never get good if you never fail. If everybody laughs at every joke, I don't know. It's nice to get the laugh, but it's the learning happens in the when it's crickets and tumbleweeds.
You got to weed out the crappy material, and sometimes it's hard to even do that. Like, if you're really attached to a joke and you know it's good, but the audience just doesn't like it, and you keep doing it, and it's a difficult balancing act can be.
Yeah, well, I've got one of those. I keep throwing it out there, and it's got like a 20% success rate.
Yeah.
It's one of my few one-liners it's in the context of a story. I usually shoehorn it into the Bible camp one, but what is it? I don't even remember what it. Oh, right. I asked you've probably heard me do it. I asked the crowd if they have any unusual sexual fetishes, and then there's usually an awkward silence, and then I say, and it's kind of out of context, and then after the awkward silence, I just say, "Sorry, I get off on tangents," and then I move on.
Yes, I do remember that joke, and I love that joke, actually, because
that's kind of a Dan McCarthy joke.
Very close to a Dan McCarthy joke, yes. Like, a lot of times I find the stuff that I do, I have a very difficult time determining what the difference between something being funny and something being clever.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think, oh, if something is particularly clever, then automatically it's just comedy gold, and that's not always the case.
Yeah.
My favorite joke that I have, that I've ever written, has never done well, not once.
Yeah.
And it's my tortoise joke, but no one ever likes it. Like, I like turtles, but I love correcting people. No one likes that joke, but I love it.
I keep telling it. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take another break, and then we'll get more into the craft
of
comedy. So, and again, I have not chosen. So let's just pick the next one that's on my list here. Let's go for some Vince Staples with 6500. Oh, now I screwed it up again. I turned the volume down before I started it. Falling into these traps over and over again, Dan. But anyway, here it is. St. John. Actually, let's do a station ID first. And then we will do it. So let's do a station ID house 2.
On your dial, 107.3 makes you smile. It's local, 107.3 FM. Jumping out of that backseat, bussin',
bus missions with the blower as a youngin' back and kill him out. Had him copping crystal through the prison door. Feel the foe when I'm feeling low. Time to stretch a nigga, ride 3 sections. Shit, I hope you got protection with your hot bow when the cops out. Shit, I'm cold with my 45 brown rag, green light. Yo, the top. Birds and the bees come and fuck with a G. Hot as 6500 degrees. Hard on the hoe, drop your drawers to the floor. Gangsta guy, baby, get on your knees.
Baby girl, get on your knees.
6500 degrees.
Black been hot bout
6500 degrees.
Black been hot bout
6500 degrees.
Black been hot bout
6500 degrees.
6500.
You alone. Car full of niggas, but you alone. It's time to show how much you love your home. It's one nigga outside, two niggas up inside the store. One nigga gon' die, the other two can come along. Gloves with the disguise, bang the set before you blow. Don't stop till he drop, don't shoot for the skies and shoot for his toes. I told you before, that niggas gotta die for this shit to survive. Is you with it or not? Get to knocking in. Problem is, a lot of niggas scared of the consequence. Common sense missing from your head when the pressure on. Niggas from my home ain't enrolled in the colleges. Fuck a class, junkies hitting glass. Get the money long, beamer with the tents in the stash. No tags, pumping poison on the air. Getting cash till a nigga gone. It ain't shit wrong with the truth. Got the juice, would've threw that nigga Bishop off the roof. Hey! Come and fuck with a G, high to 6500
degrees.
Hard on the hoe, drop your drawers to the floor. Gangsta guy, baby, get on your knees.
Baby girl, get on your knees.
6500 degrees.
Black been hot bout
6500 degrees.
Black been hot bout
6500 degrees.
Black been hot bout 6500 degrees.
And we're back, St. John Forward Radio on local FM 107.3. And I'm John Forward. I'm joined here by Dan McCarthy. We're past the halfway mark. How are you feeling about it so far?
Pretty good so far.
Yes. Yeah, so we were talking about more the mechanics of the joke. You're the one-liner guy of the scene. Is there anybody else that does? Are we at Troy Haynes does, Glenn KMO does.
And Matt Keenan, he's pretty new, but that's like he's not really super one-liner-ish, but he's a joke guy, right?
Yeah. So I've got like a handful, and I'm always really excited when I think of one. It's usually peppered in like in the context of a story, but I've got a few here and there.
Yeah. It's my favorite kind of joke.
So. Yeah. So who are your favorites?
I would say my number one's Dimitri Martin. A lot of people would be surprised to hear anybody say anyone but Mitch Hedberg. He would be my number two, but Dimitri Martin's my number one. I like Steven Wright, of course, and Jimmy Carr's up there as well. But I've always loved Dimitri Martin.
Yeah, well, I would say in that pantheon, I would put Steven Wright at the top, because I like the kind of the absurdist end of it.
Yeah.
And like Mitch Hedberg and Dimitri Martin, I would kind of put even. They're different enough. Like Hedberg, like joke for like, I guess joke for joke is probably better, but I feel like Dimitri's got a bit more range, I guess. He does different stuff, and I really liked his important things with Dimitri Martin and like the sketches, and he does like the palindrome stuff and like the visual stuff, the drawings. I have if you're over at Splood's house, I gave him my copy of Dimitri Martin's book. It's all like drawings. It's kind of really basic, kind of he compared it as almost like Far Side, but like through Dimitri Martin. Well, it's just really basic stuff. It's like the kind of stuff that he'd do on the whiteboard on the TV show. And Jimmy Carr, I haven't really gotten in. I watched one of his specials on Netflix and was really into it. And I liked him. I saw him on the Roast Battle last season, and that was fun.
Yeah.
But you weren't always just one line. When you started out, you were kind of different. So
yeah, I didn't have enough one-liners at the time, because initially that was always my plan, was always just go up there and tell some jokes, because that's, to me, the essence, like, that's the core of what comedy is the jokes. Yeah. I know that there's a lot more to it than that, but the jokes are the most important part to me. But when I first started, I realized I maybe have about 10 of these things,
yeah,
and that's not going to be enough to fill it, like, a 5 or 10 minute set. So what I'm going to have to do is, you know, write some actual material. So I did, and it went over well too.
Yeah.
But I prefer just to doing quick jokes.
Yeah. Well, I'm the opposite. Obviously, yeah. I start, well, especially before I had to keep to like a reasonable set time, when I was getting like band length spots on a music open mic, I could just ramble for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's fine. That's more kind of just, that's all I knew how to do. And I guess, when I started out, the main inspiration, I guess, was I was listening to a lot of Henry Rollins' spoken word,
yep,
at the time, and he's not a stand-up comedian. He just tells stories, yeah, that are,
but he is funny,
that are
though,
kind of funny. But yeah, it's not joke-heavy. But
yeah,
as the years progressed, I've gotten better at inserting jokes within the stories.
Yeah.
And, but I don't know. I like the... I don't think I would ever... Well, if I ever had enough of them, I'd probably attempt... like to do an all one-liner set,
yeah,
but that would be more as a novelty. I don't think I'd feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think it's good to have different tools in the toolbox.
Yeah.
So just I'm just curious, like, why throw out the bits and the stories and just do one line? Because like I can do, like, my main thing is the stories, but
yeah,
I still, if I think of like a jokier bit, like, and I've got a couple of those that are less story and more bit, and
yeah,
I throw some one-liners within the story. I try to use everything I got at my disposal.
Yeah. Why limit myself, basically, is...
Well, yeah, I just feel like you must be... I'm sure you've got stories, and you've got bits that were good when you started out. Do you just have to throw those away?
Well, I'll hold on to them, but honestly, I've just retired most of it. I don't like to do as much as it I don't get that much opportunity to do stand-up. Mm. Like, I might get out for a show a month if I'm lucky.
Yeah.
So, I try to get as much new material out there as possible, and I don't like to do the same jokes too many times, because I find I grow bored of them, yeah, and once I'm bored of them, then I feel like it's really difficult to say them in a way that people are going to enjoy. So, my first couple sets I did, I'd say probably about the first 10 I did was traditional-style stand-up, mm, and I've just kind of gotten rid of most of those, but some of them I've taken lines from them and turned them into some of the one-liners that I use now.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those bits started off as just one quick joke, and then you kind of build on it from there. But I don't think I'll ever be bringing a whole lot of it back. I think like the one-liner thing is where I'm here to stay. I don't really have stories. Like you say, I may, but keep in mind I'm a married dude with a couple of kids who is with the same girl I was with when I was in 11th grade. Like, I didn't have exactly a, yeah, an entertaining life.
Yeah.
So I prefer honestly just pure straight jokiness. And also, I don't like to leave a whole lot of myself on that stage.
Yeah.
Like, when you leave the stage, people know a little something about John Forward. No one knows a damn thing about Dan McCarthy when he leaves that stage, and I kind of like it that way.
Yeah, and that's good. I like it too, but, like, my taste in comedians is generally the more,
yeah,
oversharing personal,
yeah,
information.
You're like a Mark Maron type, yeah, of dude, yeah. I like a lot of those guys too. I really, yeah, do.
And, like, Stanhope's probably my favorite, and you know, you get a good feeling for the kind of person he is when he comes off.
Absolutely, and I would put him... I would say he's currently the number one comedian working in the world at the moment, and probably has been for the past 10 years. He's absolutely amazing, and there's pretty, yeah, well no reason that he's not a household name other than the fact that he's really,
yeah,
really
good. Well, he's more of a comics comic.
He, like, is a comedian. And
yeah, people that know him are, like, like Dave Attell says, like, he's the greatest living comedian.
And Dave Attell is one of the greatest living comedians as well, so...
Yeah, so it means something.
Yeah.
And, you know, John Forward.
Yeah, of course. If I could... I've heard this asked before, that if you had, like, you knew it's your last day on Earth, and you could hear, you know, one album, like, one new album from, like, one band, who would it be? Or see one concert or something like that. But I've also heard it phrased as, like, one brand new 1 hour of stand-up comedy. Who would it be? And for me, it'd be Doug Stanhope.
Yeah.
Like, a new Stanhope hour is... it's Christmas. it's something I look forward to thoroughly when I know one's coming out, more so than any other comedian.
Well, yeah, and well, some of his stuff is hit or miss, but like even the quote unquote bad ones aren't bad, but just are not up to snuff. And most of the time, he'll admit as much. Like there's the one that he recorded in Oslo. I think it's before he turned the gun on himself or something.
Which is the greatest comedy album name of all time.
Yeah. I liked it, but he just is like, oh, it's garbage, and they only filmed that just because they had access to like a crew and something. And my favorite one is Beer Hall Putsch. It's on Netflix.
It was pretty outstanding.
That's one of my favorite specials ever. Yeah. His new one was pretty good, but I don't think it was
It wasn't as good as Beer Hall Putsch, but it was still good.
Yeah.
My favorite to me was No Refunds. I like No Refunds the most, but that was the first exposure I had to him back in like 07 or 08, and that was when I really fell in love with Doug Stano.
Yeah, and do you listen to his podcast?
Not every episode, but quite a few episodes, I love the Funhouse with Chad Shank
I listen to pretty much all of them, and I feel like I might as well be his roommate,
because
I hear him talk for 3 hours a week, probably.
Yeah.
And, just all the stuff going on in his life.
But,
I guess this is as good a time as any. I was going to, since you hate music and you didn't want to choose a song, I was going to play your clip from the Every Comedian in New Brunswick, which is not your usual style.
No.
I don't think we need to set it up too much because you kind of set it up within the bit at the beginning anyway. So let's hear Dan McCarthy's set and then we can talk about it afterwards.
All right.
And here we go. Let's pull it up. Not on YouTube, so you can't find this yourself. Is it public on your Facebook if anybody wants to find this?
It is. If you scroll back to like beginning of
November. It was posted on Halloween.
Yeah. I plan to put it on YouTube eventually. I'm just kind of lazy with computer stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, here's your set, and we'll be back in 3 minutes and 17 seconds on St. John Forward Radio.
Welcome to Dan McCarthy! Thank you. I'd like to start by apologizing because this is not my normal act and this is going to get a little awkward. So when I heard that this show was in memory of Lloyd Raven and all the proceeds would be going to his wife and his sons, it hit me very close to my heart. This is probably the only time I'll ever speak about this on stage, but I lost my own father to suicide when I was 12. That's the awkward part. I was waiting ready for that. Don't worry, it's all uphill from here. So losing your dad that young, it's really kind of a hard thing to process, right? Like, I was only 12. I just wish that the first couple of years they had told me that he had gone to a big farm up north with all the other dads where he could just run and play and have as many treats as he wanted. Losing a parent that young, though, regardless of the circumstances, leaves a hole in your heart, and that hole is most easily filled with getting laughs from strangers. So we're all very appreciative of your charity this evening. Yeah. Leaves a bit of a chip on your shoulder, and I was a pretty fat kid, so in my case, the chip on my shoulder was sour cream and onion. And I'll be honest with you, it has caused me to suffer from low self-esteem, so I make all these jokes to make sure that others also suffer from my low self-esteem. There are certain things, though, you don't get to learn when you lose your dad really young, too. Like, my mom taught me how to shave. Did a good job, right? I never learned how to catch a fish. And now I've got 2 sons, and they have to learn how to do that sort of thing, and I'm supposed to be the one who teaches them. So, to make up for lost time, this past summer, I took my boys to a nice, secluded lake, and we just cast in stick after stick of dynamite. We caught like 1,000 fish. It was awesome. Now, we don't have a whole lot of time up here tonight, folks, so the last bit I have here is just goes right out to Lloyd's kids, because I've been there. I've been in the exact situation they're in. And it's hard, and no adult knows how to speak to them. There's nothing that you can say that could possibly kill the pain, but what I can say is the ability to make fun of it and the ability to laugh at it has helped me immensely. I'm not joking when I tell you that my father died on November 15th, 1999. And on my very first Christmas day without him, I actually thought, I can't believe he didn't stick around to find out how all this Y2K nonsense plays out. It was at the dinner table, too. It wasn't appropriate. Yeah. Because remember, just as with any tragedy, this is the last thing I'm going to say, as with any tragedy, losing a parent to suicide isn't funny because there's anything funny about it. It's funny because it has to be. That's all I got.
So there we go. 1,300 views. Story and personal.
Yeah. Only because the show kind of demanded it. Not specifically that they were asking for dead dad material, but...
Well, if you're going to do dead dad material, that's the place to do it.
That is the place to do it. And given that we were only allotted 3 minutes, you know, I thought that not a whole lot of my material would really do that well within a three-minute span. Like, I could probably throw in, like, 10 one-liners in 3 minutes, but it was an opportunity to do something that I kind of thought about for a little while, and I chose to use it then, because I definitely couldn't make that more than 3 minutes. Like, that was as much as I had.
Yeah. Well, like, what? Like, for example, why couldn't you do that one again, polish it up a little bit?
Well, number one, it's a downer. I get that, like, you know, you can joke about dark stuff. But if I were to do that on a show that wasn't in memory of a dude who killed himself, that would have been way darker, way meaner, way more uncomfortable for everyone involved. When I initially wrote that bit, I put more time into writing and editing and chopping this up and putting this around and stuff on that bit than I've ever done on anything else I've ever done. Because when I first started that, that was dark.
Yeah.
It was real dark. And when I realized kind of who I was writing it for, because I basically wrote that for Lloyd's kids.
Yeah.
And then I realized maybe going super dark for, you know, the 10, 8, and 6-year-olds is not the best idea. So I wanted something...
it's not like they were there in the front row.
No, but I figured people would be there, family of his, or, you know, and eventually I would hope that they get to see it eventually.
Yeah.
I just didn't want it to be... Not everyone gets affected the same way by the same type of tragedy. Like, yeah, their dad killed themselves, my dad killed himself, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to grow up to be super morbid like I am.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they could grow up and still be, like, fairly functional humans because they were young enough to not quite understand it when it happened, whereas I was just kind of an awkward age where it just really formed me into somebody who just doesn't think anything's off limits when it comes to humor.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I go places like that. I've got some dark stories that you wouldn't like if I... Like, for example, the one that I did at Wilser's Room and on Friday at O'Leary's is about my grandfather dies through in the course of the bit.
Okay.
And it's probably the darkest... It's one of the darkest things that I have. Like,
yeah.
When it goes in that direction at some point, I don't know. I just, for me personally, the stuff that I have that has happened with me, I kind of use it. I find it kind of good to unburden myself of it.
Yeah.
And I think even I don't think that needs to be just for Lloyd's kids. I think when you leave a little piece of yourself on stage like that, I think people relate to that, even if they don't relate to the specific thing that happened to you, because everybody's gone through something. And I don't know, just, and again, more so, that's kind of a different thing, but generally, like, if I've got something that happens in my life that I feel really terrible about or ashamed about, I just feel like it's harder to feel bad about it if I tell that story and it makes people laugh.
Okay.
I guess, and, you know, like the first bit that I wrote, aside from when I when I did like 4 comedy sets back in like the early 2000s. On this current wave, the first one that I wrote was the one about finding my dead mom's porno stash.
Yeah.
And like that was something for that. That's just something I carried with me for a really long time. And that was my deep, dark shame. I wouldn't even tell May about it until like one day she just found the tape and was like, "What? Where'd this come from?" And just, she didn't care. She wasn't mad at me or anything. And I was just so mortified. I threw it away immediately. And then it was probably like a year later after. And I didn't even tell her directly. I had decided to, don't do drugs, kids. But, back many years ago, I'd, experimented with some LSD, and I decided to do that by myself at home at like 11 a.m. on a Tuesday. And I was feeling, like unburdening myself, and I sat down with a microphone in front of my computer and just recorded my confession. And then I sat on that for like another 6 months before I made May sit down and listen to it with me. And I was so embarrassed. I was like, oh God, she's going to be so grossed out, and she's never going to be able to look at me the same way. And she just laughed, and it made me feel better. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know May particularly well, just having met her a couple times, but she seems like she's less, I feel like she'd be a little less judgy than your average person might be about something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think there's something to be said for just the gallows humor and taking something that should be horrible and just finding the humor in it. Like, I remember when my grandfather died, even my dad, who's not like a super funny joking around guy, something that stuck out from me, we were at the funeral or something, and somebody told, we were just standing around at the wake, I think, and somebody said they were going over somewhere else into another room, and my dad just kind of made kind of a deadpan crack. He's like, yeah, I'll make sure no one steals them. Just, and that was just unexpected, and I don't know, some people deal with dark things, and some people would hear that and be like, what a monster, how can you be joking about that in a time like this? And I don't know, I think when you talk about stuff like that, everybody kind of has that, not everybody is feeling funny in the dark moments, but the people that are, not everybody's in a position where they get to say it out loud because they're worried about like what other people are going to think of them. And I think that as comedians, we can kind of, we've got an excuse to do that, and I think people like to live vicariously through us.
I've had more reaction in my life when I make jokes about the dead dad thing that tend to side more with the, I can't believe you're joking about that, you're making people uncomfortable, versus actually like enjoying the joke for what it is.
Hmm.
So I feel like I gravitate away from it, like privately, like between my brother and I especially, like we're super dark with a lot of the, you know, dad suicide jokes. And in fact, when I first wrote that bit, one of the big pieces that I cut out of it was his third attempt at suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So like I wrote, it was probably about a 2-minute chunk about how bad he was at suicide, that like the first 2 attempts, how he had failed, and you know, how do you screw this up, and you know, all this stuff. And then I thought, like, well, if this is going to be going out and I don't know the exact Lloyd situation, I don't want to like mock people who are attempting suicide and not being particularly good at it, because I feel like that's just like, it's punching down at a level that I'm not really comfortable with.
Well, you're not really mocking anybody. If anything, you're mocking your own stupid thoughts that you had in reaction to it. And that's how I see it. And like when I first started, that was a decision that I made. Because when I was making my comeback to comedy, I thought about, like, I did the MC Crosswalk thing back in the day, and that was a character. And I'd thought about doing a more character-based thing, kind of like a Nick Kroll type thing, because it's an easy mask to hide behind, and you just go up and be that guy, and you don't really need to think about it. But when I wrote that, the thing about my mom, it just, I don't know, it just kind of clicked from me, and I felt like I need to be John Forward up there.
Yeah.
And again, that's not what everybody needs to do, but that's what I do. And I think there's a place for it. And I would like to see more of a mix. I want to see Dan McCarthy up there every now and then, just a peek behind the curtain.
All right. Well, maybe next, maybe not next No Jokes Bar, because I'm planning on doing probably one in another couple of months. I'm not quite ready for that one yet, but
well,
some point
those,
in the future.
That bad suicide
section. Yeah, that's what I'm kind of thinking. I'll pull it out. It's not, you know, it's not my most polished material, but I'll, I don't know, it's an R-Bar show, so it'll be, you know, might be worth pulling out once in a while, just for shits and giggles.
All right, well, we're wrapping up. We're at the end. Do you have any shows coming up or anything going on?
My next show is going to be in Fredericton at the Delta, Battle of the Comedians, and I'm opening for it. It's going to be the first Saturday in March, I believe.
It's March 11th. I'm one of the battlers on that.
Oh,
so
are you? Okay.
I'll be there. It's going to be me, Jimmy McKinley, and Corey Hartland.
Okay, well, I wish you the best of luck in battle, sir. I wish I was right up there with you, but unfortunately, I'm just a lowly opener.
All right. Well, yeah, so if you're in Moncton, I'll be doing the Hubcap Amateur Contest tomorrow and losing in a glory of flames, but they're not going to forget me. So that's my goal for that. And then the next No Jokes Bar at the R Bar is going to be on the 18th. And on the 17th, I'm doing a show with Mark Splood, Brittany Campbell, and the Reverend Brian Giles at the Grassroots something or other in Grand Bay.
That's going to be a good show, everybody.
And then I might as well announce it now. On the Sunday after the R Bar show, I think it's the 19th, I'm going to dust off the video of me bombing on the St. John Boardwalk in 2002. We're going to do a live stream with commentary with myself, Arif Hussein, and Mark Splood. And it's going to be a good time. And yeah, then the usual first Friday of the month at O'Leary's, third Saturday at the R Bar. Just join the No Jokes Bard group on Facebook and you'll get all the details. And so thanks for joining me, Dan.
No, thank you for having me, Don.
And let's figure out something to close out on. Let's go with some Karma to Burn for the last 45 seconds until I get cut off. Tune in next Monday, 9 to 10 p.m., St. John Forward Radio, local FM 107.3. Good night.